Words and Culture is made possible with funding from SiriusXM through the Community Radio Fund of Canada. Words and Culture is produced by Kim Wheeler. Kaylin Belair is our audio engineer and editor.
Onigiwahi.
Gigawabamin.
Soko seni deni e. Minen yuji hina.
Ekose.
Kakuutau. We'll see you again.
This is Bird Note. These baby geese, or goslings, are leaving the nest. Goslings are a familiar sight because almost as soon as they hatch, they're up and walking. Ducklings, goslings, and other waterfowl spend up to 30 days in the egg, so they're able to walk, swim, and feed themselves as soon as they hatch. We call these chicks precocial because they seem to be mature beyond their age, like precocious children. By contrast, the babies of pigeons, robins, and most songbirds spend less time, perhaps only 2 weeks, maturing in the egg. They hatch blind, naked, and helpless, and must continue to develop in the nest before heading out on their own. We call these chicks altricial, needing to be nourished, since they depend on their parents to feed and protect them. By the time these juvenile birds leave the nest, they're the same size and shape as the parents, and often we don't recognize them as young birds. So, downy chicks following their mother around are precocial. Naked, helpless, nest-bound babies are altricial. For Bird Note, I'm Mary McCann. Bird Note gives you the sounds of birds every day, and you get the sights as well when you follow us on Instagram at Bird Note Radio.
The annual Sled Island Music and Arts Festival is back June 19th to 23rd. Experience 5 days of music, comedy, film, and art in diverse venues across Calgary, Alberta. Featuring New York experimental hardcore trio Show Me the Body as guest curator, incisive Chicago rapper Mick Jenkins, Los Angeles indie rockers Cherry Glazer, Canadian indie rock sensation Ecstasy, genre-bending rap artist Carrie Faux, Montreal-based hip-hop trio Planet Giza, 70s Zamrock revivalist Witch, trailblazing Argentine singer-songwriter Juanita Molina, and many, many more. Plus, there's over 150 more artists still to be announced. Check out the current lineup and get your passes and tickets at sledisland.com.
Hello, Pablo, and welcome to the program again.
Hello. Nice to be here.
We are sort of in the middle of spring, and we're looking at a bit of a change in the weather for a little while anyway. We've had hot for a while, and now it seems to be cooling off.
Correct. Yeah, today's a bit chillier than a week ago. And we also noticed our vegetables are feeling the change of weather. Today I was in the garden, and all our leeks that we planted last fall, they start blooming. So we need to start harvesting before the center of the leek goes woody, and we lose the whole crop. As well, arugula, a week ago we talked about that, went into flower.
Yeah.
So yeah, we are removing the plants, making space for some other summer crops.
Yeah, so now it's time to sort of transition from both the fall and the early winter crops, because you say the leeks were planted last fall.
Correct, yeah.
And then some of the leafy ones were planted earlier this spring, and now they're you're harvesting them and time to move on.
Now it's time to start transplanting all our summer crops. One of the crops that come to my mind at the moment is corn.
Yeah.
It's warming. This weather is okay for corn. The only thing that we need to keep in mind when we plant corn or transplant corn, that at least we have a 3 rows or at least 3 feet, 4 feet long of corn together, all together.
Right. It's a very tall crop.
It's a tall crop, but we need to make clumps of canes of corn.
Yeah.
Because pollination happens through wind.
Okay.
So we need that the pollen from the flower male flower goes into the silks through the wind. So we don't want that. When it's too windy, the pollen is carried away. So we need to keep everything into a clump.
Great. So let's talk about how you prepare the soil before you plant the corn itself.
Oh, yeah. So what we do is loosen the soil using a spading fork. Mm-hmm. And we don't turn the soil over. It just back and forth, making to space, making to air goes into the soil. And then we add some compost.
Right.
And then we just put the corns into it.
Yeah. Why would you not want to turn the soil over?
Because the soil itself has lots of microorganisms. Mm-hmm. And the microorganisms that live at the bottom of the soil, they don't like to be exposed to the light.
Right.
And therefore, they will be killed. So we want to keep them where they are. But we still want to give some air to get into the soil.
Right, so you'd like perhaps use a fork or a spade and just...
Yeah, a spading fork which has the things are flat. So we just throw in the soil and back and forth, side to side. So this way we create a spaces, loosen the soil and air goes into the soil.
And then once you're bringing the corn out, as you say, you need to arrange it properly.
Yes, it has to be arranged properly in order to make sure that there is pollination, and therefore we will have corns, ears of corn full of seeds, which is the one we eat.
Right.
And when the corn is around knee high, there's a time that we plant the beans, so the beans will climb into the stalk of the corn. So if we put together at the same time, the beans grow faster.
Yeah,
and the poor corn is just smothered by the beans. So we had to make a difference. Yeah, how we plant.
Are the corn stalks quite strong? They don't need to be supported.
No, they don't need to be supported, but we need to now and then earth some soil around the stalk. These corn of stalks, they have adventitious roots, so like tending to attach more to the soil to get them support. Otherwise, the corn, because of how tall it grows, it tends to topple.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the things that we want to avoid in the garden soil.
And do you need to think about wind when you're choosing where in the garden to put the corn?
Yes. particularly when they will come and... If we have, not because the plants could tilt, but it's about the pollen being taken away, and we don't have any corn. Yeah,
you want it gently jostled, but not blown too much.
Yes, because in our garden we have a small garden bed, so when you plant in the farm, it's no problem. The edges of the farm, the edges of the field, they won't have any corn.
Yeah.
But in the center, yes.
Yeah.
But we have a small garden bed, so we had to try to prevent that. Yeah, that edge effect.
And then when you plant the beans, how long do you wait before adding those in there?
I think at least around a month.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and the beans we can start indoors as well or somewhere else, and later we just transplant.
What sort of beans are you planting?
We are planting pole beans. I think is the Ferrari variety that we like a lot, and as well we have the red scarlet runners that is produce very big beans and beautiful red flowers for the bees.
Great. So with the beans, do you just sort of scatter them in there, or do you put them in a rows between the corn rows, or how do you do that?
We put at the base of each corn.
Okay.
Yeah, so one plant per plant of corn. So,
right. And then the beans use the corn for their support.
For their support, yes. Yeah. And we have these two. And when we water the soil, not the leaves. Beans don't like to have water on their leaves.
Right.
That's one of the things. And so we just water the soil. Yeah.
Excellent. Well, we can get our corn started.
Correct.
And next week we'll talk about some more of the summer plants that you're putting in.
Absolutely. Yeah. There are lots of summer plants that are coming, such as zucchinis and cucumbers.
Yep. Excellent. I look forward to that. Pablo Vimas of Embark Sustainability Society. You'll be back next week, but tell us about how people can learn more about Embark.
So, yeah. So if you are following us, Embark Sustainability can be found on embarksustainability.org. Our social media channels are embarksustain. Mm-hmm. And currently, we are also calling to our SFU community. We are starting our summer cohort, 12 weeks of gardening with me every Thursday from 12 to 1:30. And during that time, we share all the experiences and how to do things in the garden. So
if folks are interested in what they're hearing here, they can get a much more intensive education, hands-on education.
Hands-on, yes. Everyone will get a plot in the garden. Yep. At the moment, the plot is being cultivated by the spring cohort, which is finishing today.
Yep.
And the new cohort will take it over and as well will help to maintain and harvest the garden that during these 12 months of summer is very plenty to share.
Excellent. So very quickly again, how do people find out about that?
Yes, visit our website, embarksustainability.org, under events.
Excellent. Thanks so much for joining me today, Pablo.
Thank you.
And we will talk to you again next week.
Likewise.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Soon you'll be there. The residents of Crab Park recently opted to withdraw from proposed mediation in their human rights complaint, which was filed in December of 2023 and then fast-tracked by the HRT in recognition of the urgency of their situation. Since January of 2022, when Supreme Court of British Columbia Justice F. Matthew Kirshner secured legal daytime sheltering at Crab Park for the unhoused, the City of Vancouver, Vancouver Park Board, and the residents have disagreed over various issues. The human rights complaint is based on alleged discrimination by the City of Vancouver and Vancouver Board of Parks and Recreation for failing to provide proper sanitation, electricity, protection from extreme heat, and good faith consultation, and is based on the protected characteristics of age, sex, disability, place of origin, and in this case that means homelessness, and Indigenous identity. On March 18th, the City of Vancouver enacted their designed cleanup of Crab Park. By April 19th, this plan, which initially explicitly said it was not a decampment, had reduced the residents from about 30, 35 people down to 14 and had announced plans to continue reducing until all the unhoused residents were gone. We wanted to find out what happens to the human rights complaint if there are no more residents in Crab Park. CFRO spoke with Yanni Nikoladakis Mustafa, articling student with CLASS, Community Legal Assistance Society, who is responsible for handling the human rights complaint the Crab Park residents have filed against the city.
So the case will carry on. The complaint is currently construed under Section 8 of the Human Rights Code, which is solely about services pertaining to Crab Park and Crab Park residents. And it's a class complaint. So it applies to the City of Vancouver and the Parks Board's failure to provide services to the members of that class. So to go to the root of your question of what happens if the city completely dismantles the park and what happens to the complaint, then the Human Rights Tribunal is unlikely to order anything specific relating to services at the park, right? Because there would be no residents to provide services to. So then the complaint just becomes solely about damages, so injury to dignity, and seeking a declaration that the City of Vancouver and Parks violated the Human Rights Code. So there's still room for accountability, but it could be years away. And also finding members of the class, members at that point, would be extremely difficult, for them to actually get any damages. I should say, though, that this could still be a precedent-setting case if the tribunal agrees that failing to provide the services is discrimination. Mm-hmm. Encampments exist across the country. They will continue to exist across the country until there are sufficient alternatives. And, residents deserve basic access to sanitation, electricity, like things to just sustain life. So if the tribunal does make a declaration to the effect of its discrimination, it would be huge. And even if it frankly doesn't help this particular group of people at Crab Park, it could have a huge impact across Canada. I think lots of other areas are watching to see what happens here. It's frustrating that, we can't provide something instant for them through the Human Rights Tribunal. As they have openly stated now, the decamping and reducing the camp to pretty much nothing. Mm-hmm. Or to at least reduce the camp to make sure that there's no more temporary daytime sheltering area. It is a bit frustrating because there's no dispute. Yes, we also wanted it to be clean. The residents wanted it to be cleaned. They wanted it to have sanitation. They wanted to be able to, not be worried about the cleanliness of the park. And it's not about the fact that it has been cleaned. It's how they did it. And the removal of people and the confusion around it and the seeming lack of clarity of what was actually happening, and a lot of residents feeling a lot of fear too about you know, what was going to happen to their housing. And unfortunately for a lot of those residents, their fears were well-founded. So there was a safe communication. And trying to seek a way to build trust between residents and the city. Mm-hmm. And the manner in which the city has conducted themselves here made that really difficult. And, you know, I think a lot of residents are very disappointed, and it's hard to see where they go from here. Just housing, and then also in terms of how the city addresses the homelessness issue in the city in general, and what the future is, because homeless people will exist, encampments will exist. So the question really comes down to, are you trying to get rid of homelessness, or are you trying to get rid of the homeless? All that's happened now is that you have unhoused people that are now just spread throughout the city. It's our position definitely that Section 8 of the Human Rights Code has been breached regarding services.
If the residents are encamped in Crab Park, who's your client?
So we have a representative that represents the class. So they have duties and obligations to the class to represent their best interests. There are ways for us to keep in touch with members of the class and keep track of people, but of course it becomes way more difficult once there's a decampment like this. And or once, you know, let's say it's completely decamped, it would pose, you know, significant difficulties of trying to keep in touch with the class. But we're confident that we still be able to keep this case alive because, as I said, there is significant precedential value. And, you know, of course, everybody wants this to be meaningful for the class members here. But, you know, we're trying to remember that this is a issue that needs to be addressed, and we can't let it slide. So there needs to be accountability.
That was Yanni Nikoladakis Mustafa, articling student with CLASS, Community Legal Assistance Society. CFRO reached out to the City of Vancouver for comment on this story and received back the following statement. Quote, as the matter is before the tribunal, the city will not be commenting on the matter. End of quote. According to a recent press release from Crab Park, the city's actions towards Crab Park have garnered the attention of several organizations, including the Human Rights Commissioner, Federal Housing Advocate, the First Nations Leadership Council, the Aboriginal Housing Management Association, and the Assembly of First Nations Regional Chief Terry Tagee. An open letter was written by medical students at the University of British Columbia's Faculty of Medicine who voiced their concern. In addition, another open letter was signed by 650 community members in opposition of the city's actions, including BC Civil Liberties Association Executive Director Lisa Hughes and UBC Professor Dr. David Suzuki. Where the story goes and what happens to the vulnerable residents of Crab Park is unknown. As Fiona York, representative for the Crab Park human rights complaint on behalf of the residents, has described, what was once a close-knit community of people who gathered together, made decisions together, and protected each other has now largely been dispersed, with at least two women now living under bridges. This is Bernadine Fox reporting for The Pulse at Vancouver Co-op Radio and frequencynews.ca with funding by the Local Journalism Initiative, a program of the Department of Canadian Heritage, and distributed by the Community Radio Fund of Canada.
You should have to sell your soul. If I can't walk. talking to you. Come on.
Greetings, netizens. Join us every Tuesday evening from 8 to 10 p.m. Pacific for Bitcoover FM, featuring the best in chiptune, video game soundtracks, synthesized music, history of electronic instruments, and more, right here on CJSF 90.1 FM. We'll see you in the virtual plaza, and remember to synthesize with nostalgia.